Welcome to the Unschool Files podcast. You are listening to episode 6 of season 2. This season, we are exploring self-directed education spaces, both virtual and in-person, and how they are meeting the unique needs of the communities that they serve. I'm your host, Megan, an unschooler and mama to 3 unschoolers. We've been unschooling many years. My 18-year-old is feeling ready to face the world while we are very much still in the thick of making sense out of life post-pandemic, unschooling our 12 and 14-year-olds. I have a variety of projects that I'm currently involved in, including an unschool zine. I'm on issue 6 and currently accepting submissions for that. I've been preparing a launch of a robust mentorship directory for unschooling and self-directed teens. Additionally, I host a free community space for parents, caregivers, and facilitators all around the world. We have events, group talks, a book club, and thread-style discussions over on Discord. And of course, there was the recent launch of Rome Teen Travel Collective with my good friend Sarah. We are working up the details to announce our next location for teens to roam with us early this summer. In this episode, you're going to hear from Chime Morales James, a multi-talented organizer and space holder, unschool mama, and founder of My Reflection Matters Village. She tells us all about how they came to unschooling as a family and what led her to create MRM and the way that it grew from this culturally responsive resource library to a village. Join me in welcoming Chime to the podcast. Welcome. I'm so glad to have you. Do you want to get started maybe by just sharing about who you are and what your connection to self-directed education is?
Yeah. So I'm Chime Morales James, and I've been unschooling formally for the last, let me see, my eldest is now about to be 12, and I think he was 4 when we made that choice. And, you know, it's interesting. So our story really began with Judah, my eldest. We did the traditional thing, right? Everyone tells you, hey, you gotta like put your kids in school, right? So we had enrolled him in pre-K, and it was like a Reggio Emilia type of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but I remember that it was like an art-based, more self-directed type of learning space. So we were excited about that. But Judah wasn't. And Judah physically was resisting preschool. He was like kicking doors down, screaming, crying, I want my mommy. I remember they had like an observation room where you could, like, parents could see, because, you know, there were cameras in the building, and you could see the kids without them knowing you were watching them. And I remember just crying and feeling so heartbroken watching my baby feel so angry and upset and confused, like, what the hell just happened? I've been with you all my life, and now you're putting me in this place without you. So pre-K lasted 3 days. My husband and I, Shay and I, looked at each other one day. We were like, this is not going well. We're feeling really guilty about this. And I just remember looking at him saying, like, well, who even said that we had to do this thing called school anyway? Like, who made that up? Like, yeah, we need to do something different. And I started researching homeschooling. You never thought about really homeschooling. And because I was a former classroom teacher, and when I taught in public schools, being a teacher was a lot of work. There's a lot of busy work I was expected to do. So in my schoolish mind, homeschooling was doing all of that. And I was like, hell no, I ain't doing that. Like, that's a lot of work. Yeah. And so, but because Judah was following his spirit of like, this doesn't feel good, get me out of here, and we followed his lead, it started me, you know, then I started to question, well, maybe I should reconsider this thing. So in researching home education, that's when I came across Akila, actually. And it wasn't even through Fear of the Free Child. It was a video of Akila. She was like on a show talking about, it was like a show like unschoolers versus homeschoolers. And obviously she was on the homeschooling side. And I remember everything that she said felt so right. And I felt like she was talking to me. And I knew at that point, this is us. This is our family. This is my kids. And I started like doing lots of mad question asking, as Akilah would say. And I started diving deep into like, what is unschooling? You know, what is self-directed education? How do these things work? How is it different than what I was taught as a classroom school teacher? And so, yeah, that was what led us on this journey, really.
So, okay. So much. Love the mad question asking. I think I'm going to stop there for a moment. Yeah. What are some of the biggest questions that came up during mad question asking for you that you were able to unpack right away with this approach, this unschooling approach?
Well, one of the things I began to question was curriculum and the use of curriculum and the expectations around standards. I was a special education teacher. So I have to say, it wasn't really that difficult for me to let go of the idea that kids can learn at their own pace, because that's what I was expected to support as a special needs teacher. I was expected to support kids who traditional classroom teachers either couldn't just quote unquote handle, right? They didn't know how to accommodate the pace, the rate, or the style in which kids learned at. So that wasn't a hard thing for me to let go. I already understood that going into this. But the idea of like, you know, there's a curriculum or there are things kids should know, right? That a system told us they're supposed to know. That, you know, math, reading, and writing are supposed to be taught in this particular way, and there's certain things within those subjects they should know. Those are the things that I started to question. And as a former, you know, as a special needs teacher, my specialty was in reading and writing. So I learned, like, I learned how to teach kids how to phonetically read, right, in a very specific way. And I tried doing that with my kids when they were really, really young, and they were rejecting it. And that again led to the question of like, oh, so is there another way in which kids can learn how to read that I haven't considered, like a more natural, organic way? So when I started hearing stories of other unschooling families, and like they would say things like, yeah, my kid didn't really learn to read till they were like 12, you know, because then they found a need to read. I remember thinking like, what?
So reading is one of those things that I think it's so nuanced around reading. And there's lots of unschoolers who I think push back on the idea that any kind of instruction or any kind of aid around reading is, you know, too much, because they'll just learn on their own. And then there's lots of unschoolers who are kind of like, you know, this is a tool that I can help, you know, bring more information around. And with my particular child, here's how I approach it. Or this other person over here says, this is how I approach it. And so I feel like literacy is one of these things that gets people hung up around unschooling. And I really feel like it's a tool that I always like to refer back to Nicolai Pizarro and her work with literacy as a tool for not being oppressed. And this idea that like some young people might need intervention. And to me, unschooling doesn't provide this like blanket rule that says they're just going to learn when they want to or when they can. It's more about partnership. And so I wonder if you might be able to speak to that a little bit more around the partnership around literacy and exposure to language and how maybe that might have played out a little bit for you and your kids with a more natural and organic way of coming to reading.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really did come organically. So with my kids, like I said, I tried the traditional phonetic way of trying to teach my kids how to read, and they were completely rejecting flashcards and all those kinds of things. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to take a step back. And, you know, they're kids, they're young, you know, like their world is, their learning is through play. So I made sure that I just gave them free range for playing and exploring. And we would partner together in playing sometimes, right? Sometimes it was my kids together. Sometimes it was the three of us or me one-on-one. And I know. So as I started to kind of just breathe my way through letting go of the need to force the reading development and observe more and see how they were naturally asking questions around words. How do you write this, mommy? How do you spell this, mommy? You know, even just and paying attention to how they were talking and picking up, you know, the meaning of language, right? As they got older, I noticed they were beginning to ask more support on their own around reading. I mean, literally, both of them at different times came to me and said, "Mommy, can you teach me? I need you to teach me how to read." And I was noticing that they were wanting to know how to read more fluently because they already had the beginnings of like literacy development. But what they were trying to say really was like, I want to be able to read more fluently because when I'm playing these games with my friends that require me to read, I'm struggling, right? I'm struggling a little bit and I'm recognizing I need some help. And so that opened then the door for us to partner. And it was a consensual partnership. It wasn't me forcing, like, we have to do this thing now. It was them recognizing, like, I really need this help and I'm asking you to help. And I'm ready now to ask you for that help. I think a lot of that in self-directed learning is around paying attention to when kids are ready. 9 out of 10 times, they will be ready for some form of support around literacy. It's really hard not to at some point in their lives to not ask for that level of support because literacy is all, it's literally just all around us, right? Yeah.
Like, you're all surrounded by it. It's like a code that needs decoding. Yeah. I love those opportunities, like finding that window.
Yeah, it really is about, you know, and I say breathing your way through it because you can feel anxious as a parent because, you know, we've been indoctrinated to think that there's a certain way to learn literacy development and by a certain time. And so if they're 10 and they're either not reading or reading at what someone might consider like a more primary, you know, first or second grade level, you know, parents start to sweat because they're comparing, right? But yeah, that's how it's happened with us more organically. And it's funny that you say that because literally before I got on this call, we were having a conversation around journaling. So we've done on and off some journaling, some gratitude journaling, you know, just when we wake up, starting our day to give gratitude. And it started with like talking about it to now writing about it. And my kids aren't excited. You know, they will say, I don't like to write. They on a computer, they don't mind typing, right? And I get it. They're at the, that's their generation. Yeah. Right? And I've learned to also reverse my thinking around writing, that writing may start with typing and through typing, they're learning to write, right? Versus I think when I was in school, you learned to write before you learned to type. I've rewired my thinking around that, following their lead. But before we got on this call, we talked about that. And a lot of it is conversation and explanation. It isn't just like you have to write because I think it's important. It's like, well, I know this is uncomfortable for you. It takes 5 minutes to share what it is that you're grateful for, which they, you know, they enjoy sharing what they're grateful for. Like we have, you know, we talk about it. They're engaged in it. It's the writing piece that they struggle with. But I bring it back to really what they've requested of me. I'm like, you asked me for some help, right? And I'm trying to, so this is my way of integrate it through something that we normally do anyways, right? We normally talk about it. What if we just take 5 minutes to write, you know, what are some things we're grateful for? So that way I'm also helping you with some of the literacy things that you have asked me to help you with because, you know, you want to be able to do certain things. You know, you talk about playing professional ball and like, well, you got to sign contracts. You got to write up contracts. You got to like, you know, read things, you know, you got to write things like, and I can't be with you when you're doing those things, right? You'll be on your own. So they understand that. They get it. And I think that's the part I think with, I think that's the misconception sometimes people have with self-directed learning. They think it's like, oh, it's a free-for-all. Kids are just doing 24/7 all the things they want to do. And yeah, they're doing what they want to do. And also our responsibility as adults navigating a world that is complex and layered. We're also having conversations, because that's what a partnership is. We are constantly communicating, like, also, what are the things that we have to realistically navigate in this world? And what I'm responsible for helping you to learn so that you can navigate that successfully. I mean, I literally just had that conversation with them. That reminder.
I'm over here like silent clapping because I don't want the sound to overlap yours. Like, yes, this is so, so good. It's back to Akilah's wise words around the push hold. Like, we created this partnership. You asked me for this support, and now I have to do this dance of like, when do I push you, and when do I hold? Right, and sometimes that pushing is, it comes up, right? And it's necessary in all types of partnerships. You have business partnerships in the office, and sometimes you got to push your coworker in a way that feels really uncomfortable, but you have a deadline to meet, and they have their part that they need to give you so you can meet yours, and you got to say something that might be a little uncomfortable and be like, I need you to show up and do your thing. So
it's real.
I think it's so important because so many adults get wrapped around the axle of coercion. And like, I don't want to coerce them. And I'm like, the whole, it's such a dogma around unschooling that exists, where parents are just like, I'm not supposed to do that. The rules say I'm not supposed to tell them what to do. The rules say I'm not supposed to make them uncomfortable or ask them to do things that are against the thing that they have interest in. And that's such a, like, it does so much harm, actually.
It really it does. So much harm. And then when you start layering on like race and class and like all of those disabilities, right? Like you layer on all of those intersecting identities that are marginalized in our world, like we can really create an oppressive condition without intentionally wanting to do that, you know? So there's a lot there.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that actually is maybe a little segue into my reflection matters, because we want to talk about this space you've created. I know my reflection matters is both in person and online, so there's a lot to discuss there. But what led you to create my reflection matters, and what is my reflection matters for anyone who's listening and is just new to this whole program that you have?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So my reflection matters has really evolved. You know, it initially started as, you know, me as a mom, you know, I was working at the university level. So I was working with school districts as an educational equity coach and consultant, right? And so, or what people would call DEI now. And so at that time, working with schools while at that time we were home educating our children, navigating the beginnings of unschooling, I was recognizing that, you know, me as a parent and the educators I was working with were really struggling with finding culturally responsive educational tools that they could use in their classrooms that were relevant to, you know, the lived experiences of the children that they were working with. We, you know, curriculum is really white centric, you know, colonialized education is a thing. It's real. And so, you know, here I am doing this work and people are like, this is cool. We like these ideas. And where are the tools? We don't have them. So I went on this, like, I was doing a lot of legwork of just researching and finding and creating this culturally responsive resource library. So it started, that's where my reflection matters, even the word comes from, right? Started as simple as that, and it expanded into something so much more beautiful than I ever could have imagined, right? Because now we have this village that is, you know, our core values are the same, but we've shifted into like a different dimension, I feel like. You know, we now have this virtual learning community that started during COVID. So COVID pushed us to go virtually, you know, in the midst of beginning my Reflection Matters. And, you know, I started with other parents, a self-directed learning cooperative in Connecticut, in Waterbury, Connecticut. And I was noticing that when we started this BIPOC-centered space, that while we as parents are saying we wanted something different, we wanted a more liberatory type of education, we wanted a self-directed learning community that, you know, was supporting ourselves and decolonizing our learning and our ways of thinking about living, we just really didn't know what that meant. You know, we're like, that all sounds good. We have all these words. And like, what exactly does that mean? So when COVID started, it pushed us to go virtually. So not only to expand our learning community and find other communities that we can co-create these learning experiences with our families online, but also to create an opportunity where we can receive the supports as adults, because I was recognizing we needed our own healing. We needed opportunities to support our healing from living in oppressed systems, from going to oppressed educational learning spaces, right? We needed an opportunity to really receive that healing and support around creating self-directed learning communities, support around de-schooling. And so, yeah, COVID was kind of like, it was this like really worldwide traumatic experience we were all experiencing at the same time. And also like there was this beautiful thing that was blossoming as a result of forcing ourselves to have to go within, both physically and like, you know, mentally and emotionally. So yeah, that's what sort of kickstarted the expansion of My Reflection Matters into My Reflection Matters Village. And the village really has become a community where we provide the supports, the healing, and the conversations for folks to reimagine education outside of conventional schooling. So it's a place for both educators, you know, educators in non-conventional spaces, educators in conventional spaces, and that are like questioning all the things like I was as a former classroom teacher. And also for caregivers that are saying like, we're opting out, our family's opting out, and we want to be in community with people that are also questioning all the things. So we have courses, workshops, events that are majority led by BIPOC leaders in the self-directed learning movement and self-directed living movement. And it's been amazing. It's been quite an amazing journey. And I'm really, and now we're going, we're having our first annual healing and liberation retreat in Borinquen, in Puerto Rico, my homeland, where we are bringing the virtual learning experiences that we've had. And we're bringing them on the ground. So people get to meet with facilitators that they've met with virtually. We get to experience some of those, you know, learning opportunities that we've had in community, actually in physical community. So I'm excited for that direction that we're moving into. And it's been quite an adventure.
That sounds so amazing. So amazing. Say a little more about some of the events that the adults come together for and how they might be, like, what are some of the main, you mentioned healing for BIPOC folks. So what are some of the main things that you feel like have been the most supportive for the community, in that arena of healing?
Yeah. So we've had sort of like these different, I guess like arms or genres or topics that we've explored in the village, you know, because everyone's sort of at a different place in their own journey, in their own de-schooling and healing journey. So we have, from literal healers, we've had healers that have offered one time to like actual course ongoing meetings that we've met with, like, for example, we've had somatic healing with Victoria Platt, who's also joining us in Puerto Rico. Anu Halfkenny, who's done, he's done a healing and liberation sessions with our community, he's done sessions just with caregivers who are wanting to develop, you know, that want to have more partnership centered, you know, relationships with their kids and are, you know, navigating and struggling with that. So he's offered support with that. We've also had support with him for self-directed learning communities that are are navigating just like conflict, and how do you resolve conflict in a space when you're not trying to punish, right? So we've had workshops and sessions around those types of topics. We've had guest speakers that come and have shared the work around just starting on the ground, including my own work, where we've talked about what it means to organize on the ground and find your people and to start a self-directed learning community physically, whether it's a cooperative, whether it's an agile learning center, whether it's a micro school. So we've had all sorts of different guests around, developing different types of learning communities in their respective spaces. And so, that's just sort of like a snippet of some of the learning opportunities that we've offered with Damari Dickinson's, this week is showing up and doing a whole conscious parenting workshop with our community. We've had some amazing folks come by.
You have so much to offer. Myself just like browsing around and poking around. It was so much when I first jumped in, like so much to look at, but I was so just inspired by the variety of offerings. And I mean, it doesn't have to just be about unschooling, I saw there was something on there about just different types of romantic relationships. And I love that there's just all these different angles at being and getting free and raising free people. And it's so cool to see this kind of hub for that kind of information.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm glad that you mentioned like just different topics, because sometimes I see myself as a space holder of this community, right? There are some things, there's some workshops and courses I've offered, but the majority of them don't actually come from me. The majority come from like the folks that I've developed partnerships and relationships with. And so for me, this journey for me has been a shedding of so many things, and I don't want to ignore that. So for me, the village is not ignoring all of the questions that we're asking within our lives. And for maybe education was the thing that initiated the mad question asking. For some people, it wasn't. For some, it was religion. For some, it was food. For some, it was whatever it might be. And so, when we're talking about self-directed learning, it's hard. It's not just the specifics and like the how do you do this thing, right? How do I just give up curriculum, or how do I just, rethink how learning or math can be learned with my children? Yeah, it's those things, but it's also like, rethinking relationships, not just my relationships with kids, but relationships with all the people that are in my lives. It's rethinking religion. It's rethinking spirituality. It's rethinking, business and so I noticed a lot of those, I didn't want to ignore what was happening in people's lives. We are rethinking learning, but we're also rethinking living. And that is why that our offerings are layered. You're going to have opportunities to, yes, reimagine education with other people, but also reimagine what a liberated lifestyle means for your family, because your kids are learning through that. That's the lesson plan. Yeah. That's the curriculum.
Yes. Yes. So are there offerings for youth in My Reflection Matters?
So that's a good question. When we first started off, there was. So we had a private learning community within the village, because there's like these like little micro villages within our larger village network. And there were families that would meet up virtually, and we would, host virtual learning opportunities. So there were kids meeting kids from all across the world, which was amazing. Some of those families continued to nurture those relationships and meet up individually or within a small group. I feel like the village has really shifted its focus on supporting adults. That hasn't been like our central focus in the village. We have our co-op. So we have our physical co-op on the ground that continues. So there's like still our physical cooperative, My Reflection Matters cooperative, that continues to exist and continues to evolve. But the virtual arm of it has not been sort of our central focus. We've, you know, of course, parents who have developed those relationships virtually continue to meet. And they do that on their own independently. But as a village, like me as a space holder, I'm not like intentionally trying to coordinate and support that. I've allowed them to kind of do that on their own, partly because like people should do it on their own. But also like I had to, for me as an entrepreneur, also weigh like, what are the things that I'm capable of doing? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
As someone who also likes to put their hands everywhere and be doing all the things, I totally get it. So you've really switched gears from NYU with researching and development, implementing and moving this direction. Yeah. Let's maybe talk about this unique business model for My Reflection Matters. So you are able to have everybody join for free, basically. Yeah.
So we have collapsed. We have private paid memberships that we've collapsed and got rid of those and basically put the majority of that content for free in our network. There are some things that are not completely free, which I'm happy to talk about, but I'm going to pause because I feel like you have more to that question.
No. Go ahead. You can expand more if you'd like. I'm just curious how it's accessible for free and maybe we can talk about, I mean, I know for all intent and purposes, because I support the village, but for listeners, like how are you able to hold that up? How are you able to offer that and still pay your facilitators?
Yeah. So it's a lot. People don't realize just a lot what goes on behind the scenes and like all the work and all the little things you got to do to make the magic happen. Right. Yeah. So, and the funds, because we live in a capitalist system, like money is a tool that we have to use, right? It's just whether you like it or not. It doesn't even matter whether you like it or not. It's not going to disappear. So like, you know, we still need money. So our model has been to make this as accessible as possible, especially for our most marginalized village folks. And so we have never turned anyone down for lack of funds. Even for folks who wanted access to the things that cost dollars, we've given that for free for people who just can't even afford to pay $5 a month or a dollar a month. Now, our live chats in our community are always free every month. Every month I offer support, a private support group, our family village circles for caregivers that are navigating self-directed education. So we have a meetup once a month. And then we also have a private meetup for SDE organizers. And so we come together once a month as well. Sometimes we have guests that will join us in our monthly meetups. And our courses and workshops are basically pay what you can. I mean, you literally can pay a dollar a month. So you can pay $12 a year and you get access to our monthly courses and workshops, which for me feels like that's pretty much almost for free, right? Like when you think about how much it costs. and so while, there's some stuff that you pay, it's still pay what you can. So there's nothing that says like there's an absolute like set fee. We used to have that model and we have shifted over to this pay what you can. And so, people can pay. If you want access to all of our chats and our chats that we host every month are free to join, but everyone can't join for free. Or I'm sorry, not everyone can join because people are just all over the world. There's different time zones. So we record our conversations. We will also record many of our meetups. And so those recordings we have in a library inside the village, and they're accessible at Pay What You Can via Patreon. Our workshops and courses that come up every month are also Pay What You Can via Patreon. So those are the things that cost money. But like I said, it's like you could pay literally a dollar a month.
Yeah.
Super
accessible.
It's very accessible. And it's rare that, you know, someone would say like, I really just, you know, most folks are willing and can pay the dollar a month. But we've never turned anyone, and cause we do have members that don't pay anything. And because we don't turn anyone away. So we have an abundant mindset, right? Where we are shedding a lot of that scarcity mindset of like, oh, but like, what if I don't get enough? What if we, through this model, we never receive enough? And that's a real thing. Those thoughts sometimes come in our minds, especially when like things are tight. Yeah. But we just recently received a huge grant that's going to hold us over for the next 2 years and allow us to really build out our work in ways that are what we're getting on Patreon just won't allow us to do. So that's going to be a huge boost. And this is the first time I'm actually announcing it publicly. So no one even knows this yet, but
yeah, so exciting.
The Kellogg Foundation is funding us for the next 2 years, and that's going to be a huge game changer for us. So we're very excited. And I do believe like this is all part of like, again, living in an abundance mindset, believing like we're doing the work. And also there's a part of that's a leap of faith. Like it, what we need will come, and we have to like trust and believe that through the work that we're doing and the relationships and partnerships we're building, like this, you know, what we need will come. And so I feel like we're at this point of like, yes, like the pieces are coming together. So with that money, we'll be able to invest more in really building out our campaigning and tapping into folks within the self-directed learning community that have larger pockets and would want to be committed to funding us long-term so that we don't have to rely on grants and those sorts of things in the future. So we want to rely on our funding model is really around trusting and believing in our community, people who believe in our work to fund it, and folks who have more can give more, right? So that people who have less can also have access.
Yeah. It's such a long haul of work. It starts small, and I feel like, did I read that you started on Tumblr?
I did.
I think I read that you started on Tumblr. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
Starting on Tumblr, and now look, you're
is Tumblr even around? Massive...
I think that's so awesome.
Come a long way.
What kinds of offerings do members offer? Or would you say that that's just all kind of tied up in the same offerings that we've talked about previously? Like, is that all really member cultivated?
It's interesting because a lot of our facilitators are paid facilitators are also members of the village. Like Victoria is a member of the village. Zeba Savage, who's done amazing offerings around decolonizing math, is also a member of the village. So I feel like it's very rare that we have a facilitator who isn't also a village member. Sometimes they become a village member because they started as a facilitator. Sometimes they become a facilitator because they started as a villager. Yeah. Like, you know, it's different for everyone. But we do open up our calendar once a month where villagers are able to jump on the calendar and put an offering for our community. So, we've actually this month, and this is my little push for Dominique. So Dominique is a villager in our community who's done offerings several times in our community and is actually going to be doing an offering this month because her kids have opted to go into school, right? And they were at home for I think most of their lives. I think that's how they started. And so she is doing an offering this month for folks in our community who have kids that have opted into school and are still choosing a liberated lifestyle at home, is still a self-directed lifestyle at home. Like, what does it mean to still choose self-directed learning when your kids have opted into a system that often doesn't recognize self-directed learning, right? So that's an example of an offering. She hasn't put it up yet. So she said she's gonna put it up for this month. So I'm putting out a little like Dominique. She's gonna laugh.
I feel like there are lots of people who are in that boat right now who are either, you know, young people are going back to school, trying school for the first time, maybe asking for more school like structure. And us self-directed folks really got to keep our minds open and be able to shift when our young people are wanting to move to a different direction. So that kind of support is excellent to have out there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're grateful. I'm grateful for the community and like just the excitement that people have to want to share within the village. We even have white co-conspirators that have been organizing amongst themselves, you know, and talking about like what does our own healing look like as what does it mean to be a white co-conspirator in a space where we are centering the identities of Black, Indigenous, and other folks of color. So it's just been, I'm really grateful
Say
for
more. Say more about that. What are these kinds of spaces like? Are they, does some, do you have one person who steps up and says, I'll be the space holder for white folks to come and decenter themselves?
Yeah, we do. We have a couple of white
That's
folks in the,
excellent.
yeah, we do have a couple of white folks that took the charge and the lead to be like, all right, we're going to get our people together and we don't need BIPOC folks to be a part of this conversation or have to hold space for us to like, for us to, you know, be messy with our own shedding of what it means of whiteness, right? Like our own shedding around white supremacy and what all of that means for us. So, yeah, they've taken the lead in doing that amongst themselves. And I just absolutely love and appreciate it. I feel like that is a level of my work that, of the work here that I really wanted to see happen, but I knew that wasn't my responsibility to do.
Right. I'm so grateful to hear that someone stepped up and said, I see an angle here. We need to take care of our people here in this space. I love
Yes,
it.
yes.
So, how do decisions get made with My Reflection Matters? It sounds like you have a solid team of people who help keep things running and who are generally offering and working in the village to help bring things together. I know you've got a tech person who's very savvy. I don't want to speak too much for you. So,
Yeah.
how do you make these decisions?
So, yeah. Well, decisions around the offerings are based on feedback from our community. So I'm observing, right? I'm observing the conversations that people are having, posts, questions that they're putting in the community. People will literally oftentimes just send me a private message like, do you think we could have this guest, this specific person come and talk about this thing, right? And so I'm like, yeah, dope. I absolutely love it. Love the idea. And so my job, I see my job as making those connections for people and making sure that the questions that people have that we're helping to find the community of folks that could help them to like explore those questions, explore the answers around those questions, if there's even an answer to it. So yeah, those decisions are based by the what the community is saying they want and need. And so our we also I also work with Vanessa Milano, who's just like my right-hand person. Vanessa's been helping me to rethink business. Vanessa has a background around accounting and business, and so Vanessa's really been helping me a lot with doing a lot of the behind the scenes, the business behind the scenes of the village and how it sort of functions and works, and we do it in a way that is not through a very traditional business model, right? Like it's not traditional for people to have a membership model where there's a fixed membership, you know, rate and that you get more if you pay more. Like we don't do that. We've done away with that. So Vanessa's really been helping me to even de-school my thinking around business. And Shia, who's been a longtime villager in our community, has also been an amazing cheerleader in our community, and has helped us many months to help folks connect with the resources in our community. When people get lost with navigating the Mighty Networks Village because it takes some time to learn that, she has been a really big help in doing that. And we've, yeah, so we've had villagers who've started as villagers and has who have ended up taking on some, you know, paid roles and responsibilities in our community. And that and I think for me, as an entrepreneur, I've learned that really the best people you can hire are the people who are within your community, right? Like the people who you don't have to convince, you know, why we're doing the work that we're doing. You don't have to convince them of the vision, of the values. They already,
like have signed off with you, right? Like they, yeah. They're like, well, I'm that's why I'm here. So
exactly.
I've learned that the hard way because we paid folks to work with us externally out, you know, yeah. It didn't always work in the way that it has worked when we've hired within. It just hasn't. Because people just don't always understand what it is that we do and what we stand for. Even if they come in equity lens, their equity lens is within a certain, even has a limit, I guess, you know, like there's a limitation in terms of how they look at equity and liberation work. Yeah. Because they're still holding on to certain ideas around school that I think limits their ability to see beyond. Yeah, those are just some things that I've learned along the way. That
it sounds like it's just been such a process for you to slowly see the way that it needs to grow and the ways that you had to shift and change for the people that, you know, you're serving. And I mean, that's this entire series I'm doing is on spaces, self-directed education spaces. Mm. They are meeting the unique needs of their community. And you have just described it so well. It's beautiful. It almost like it just gives me chills on my arms. And as you're talking, I'm just imagining you all coming together in Puerto Rico together and like hugging and holding each other. And I don't know what you guys plan to do. If you want to share a little bit about what that in-person event is, but I was imagining it in my mind and I know it's going to be beautiful.
It is going to be beautiful. It is exciting and I cannot wait. So the topic of our retreat is harnessing the intuitive energy and self-directed learning. So we are, I mean, it really is a reflection of my own personal journey in this self-directed unschooling life. You know, I've had to question, rethink spirituality and energy and how all of that, and where do we get information? Like, it's not just in books. Wait, there's other ways we get information that we can't always see. So I wanted, one of the things I've been questioning a lot in recent years is like, what exactly directs the self? And this retreat is about exploring that. You know, it's exploring intuition, it's exploring our sixth sense. Kids are born with the ability to intuitively lead their lives. However, adults, because, you know, we've been wired as we get older to not be intuitive and to not trust our instinct, right? We often minimize kids when they are expressing their intuition, when they are leading from an intuitive space. And so, you know, I think it's really important that in the self, in when we are talking about self-directed education, that we are also centering those intuitive gifts that children have, and that we as adults know how to recognize it and know how to support it. So in our journey in Puerto Rico, up on the mountains, and we'll be up in the mountains at a retreat center, Hacienda Casa Campo is the place that we'll be at. We will be practicing some of that within ourselves. Like, how well are we intuitively in touch? We're going to be reconnecting with our own intuition. So Victoria will be supporting us with some of the somatic work that she's done virtually with us. We'll be able to do that physically with her, which is like so amazing. Atabe, who's also another facilitator who's done some of that sixth sense work with us in our community, will be there. And Lauralina, who's an unschooling mama on the island, will also be supporting us during the retreat. She'll be leading a cacao ceremony to open us up during the retreat, and has a couple few other playful offerings that we'll be doing there together. So we're integrating play, we're integrating healing and spirit work, we're integrating a lot of those connection with nature, which is why it's purposefully placed up on a mountain, you know, with the grass and the trees and away from things that would distract us from connecting with what's naturally around us. So I feel like it's an evolution. This retreat is like a reflection of the evolution of me and an evolution of the village and where it's moving towards. So I can't always predict all of where we're going, but I follow my intuition and I follow that calling. So it's always exciting.
I'm so glad that you do. I think it's beautiful, and it's beautiful to watch. And there are so many people who are going to benefit from it. Okay, my last question before I wrap up with you, because we're coming up on time. Hopefully we can squeeze it in. Maybe you can share a little bit about how folks can start or create their own community program, collective, village, whatever people want to call their space. How can people be a space holder and take a step into this kind of work?
You know, the first thing, my first always advice to people when they start saying, I want to do this thing, is like, trust that instinct, trust it, and don't allow the second guessing to even, don't even give space for the second guessing. Don't give space to that. Because the minute you start giving space to all of this, the doubt, all of the, I don't know, 9 out of 10 times, it keeps you from following this calling that you have, right? So people have to really make sure that, and how do I keep myself from not allowing, the doubt and the second guessing to enter my brain? As soon as it starts to like want to come in, I acknowledge it and I'm like, yeah, I see you, and we're not going there. Like, I literally will say that out loud to myself. Yeah, we're not going there. And I start to just restate positive affirmations. I got this. I'm meant to do this. Don't worry. Like, the answers will come. So it's not about being like delusional, like when like shit hits the fan, because like that stuff will happen. Like, you're going to hit bumps. Things are going to get hard. But you have to have a routine set up for yourself to be able to let go and not allow the negative talk and the negative chatter to enter. And once you can do that, I feel like the other things will come a little bit more easy. So finding your people, you know, like, I knew I needed to find my people because the home education spaces in our state just did not feel right for us. I wasn't a big Facebook or social media person, but I knew that to find people, that was going to be in this day and age, just the easiest way to find people. I mean, I was able to find people with just simply starting a Facebook group and being very clear about what our mission was, who we valued, what we valued, what we do, what we don't do. And that, when you're clear about your values, you're clear about what you stand for, you don't have to worry about like the people that you feel like are going to disrupt what you believe in, because they're not going to be attracted to your space or your community.
Right.
Like, you will attract who you will attract if you are very clear about who you are and what your community is. And I feel like a lot of times that's where people go wrong. I see they write these very like sort of wishy, because they're like, we want to be all inclusive. We want to make sure like we're all the, I'm like, are we really always all inclusive? Like, let's be real. Like, do you want to be a space that is welcoming of like, I don't know, people who are very racist? Like, is that, do you want to be welcoming to that? Like, so you have to be honest about who you are for and who you are not for.
Yeah.
I think that is number one.
Money piece, precision. You have to be precise and clear. What are you calling in?
What are you calling in?
Yeah. I think people can tell when it's wishy-washy too. And then you'll get, you know, just tons of people and a big nothing burger, like nothing.
It's nothing. So for me, that's the starting point. You got to stay in the game. Make sure that negative chatter and talk, there's no space for it. Come up with your routine. I have a meditation routine. I do it every morning. Like, I can't tell you what that routine is. It could be anything. It could be you're doing a somatic dance. Like, you start your day and you're like literally like jumping up and down and shaking off all of the like negative thoughts and vibes. Like maybe you're journaling, whatever it is. Maybe you have to journal all the like negative talk and then you journal in all the positive talk, right? Like yeah. Whatever that thing is, you got to have your practice, your daily practice routine so that you stay in the game. Cause it's very easy to get pushed off. If you allow that energy to push you off, like that energy is strong. And if your mind is not in the right place, the energy feeds off negative thoughts, right? So don't give it what it's going to feed off of. You got to give it the opposite. And then, you know, two, finding your people means you got to be clear about who you are and who you're not for. And organizing could be through social media, and it doesn't have to. It could be if you've got a thriving physical, you know, like if you're living in a community where people are out and about all the time, put your old school flyers together.
Yeah.
You know, like go old school, get the flyers together, put the postcards on people's cars, go to the events, what's happening in your community. How are people already organizing already and meet up there? I mean, that's what I did. I would go to where the other home educators were. And then I have my little postcards and flyers and I start talking to people. And when I, you know, talking, get their energy, their vibe, I think this is a person I should share this information with. I'm going to hold back. This is not someone I want to share this information with. Right. Like, you know, that's how it's those little baby steps of organizing that people can. Sometimes people, they're afraid to do it. Start with that positive thought.
It can be kind of nerve-wracking. It's not for everybody, but if you're not the person this is for, you're listening actively, you know, you're trying to start something, you know, you want to do something, you know, you're one of those pollinators. Someone called me that once. They said, they called me a pollinator because they said I buzz around because I move a lot. I buzz around from community to community, and everywhere I go, I start something, I get people interacting, I create spaces for people, offerings, create friendships, and then before you know it, I'm off. I buzz off and I go to a new place. And so I like to look at it like pollinating these communities.
I like that a lot. I like that. I might use that.
Certain type of people are pollinators.
Yeah. And everyone, you got to know what you're good at. Like there's no right or wrong or what's better or what's less than. Like every like role is valuable. You just got to figure out like what are the things that you're really good at and that you feel called to do. And you don't have to do this alone either. Like, you know, people organize collectively. You only need one other person. Now you got a collective.
And also I think it can be easy to get discouraged when you maybe only find one or two people where you are, but that is still a collective. Yeah. It is still a collective, still some people.
Megan, that's how we started. We had the same, you know, one or two parents that showed up with their kids, me and like one other mama showing up for every event that I hosted before I was, you know, online. You know, we do physical meetups, we're going to the park, we're going to have to do this art thing. And it was the same parent, same family. Yeah. And then it became the same two families. And then those two told another two. And then the next thing you know, we had like, you know, 35 kids. And like, I think at one time our co-op had like 35 kids. And when you added the parents, we had like 50 people. We had like a micro school.
That's huge.
It was too big for me. It was more than what I could handle. And we're now down to like six families and like 13 kids, I think 13, 14 kids. So that's doable for me, but it's hard to imagine that we started with me and one other family for a long time.
Sometimes it takes time. You got to wait it out. You know, there's been times where I got to a place to start a community and I was showing up at an empty park repetitively and not ever seeing anybody. So there's times where it's stagnant and you're not going to meet anybody and you just got to keep showing up.
It's the journey. It's the journey. It's just how it goes.
Okay, before we wrap up, where can people find you?
Yeah, so people can, we are on Instagram. So at My Reflection Matters, you can follow us on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. You can head over to our site, which is through the My Reflection Matters Mighty Network community space. So if you go into my-reflection-matters.mn.co, you can find us there. We're on Patreon as well. If you head over to our IG, all of our links are there. We have a link tree. You can, you know, connect, you can request to join our village community, which is free to join.
Yes, perfect. I'll put all of the links in there. But one last Patreon plug because it's a lot of work. We need Patreon, please, please. Yeah. So if you can, please head over to Patreon and support My Reflection Matters. I'm really excited about this retreat. So I'm going to keep my eyes open. I can't wait to see some highlights from that. Thank you so much for spending this time with me and sharing with listeners about the village and how it works and what there is to offer. I hope that this helps more people find you and find the space.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll talk
I
to you again,
appreciate
Sam.
you.
Take
It
care.
was good talking with you.
Yes, you too.
All right, take care.
Thank you so much for sharing time and space with me, Chime. And thank you all for listening to this episode. Before you go, please take a moment to head to my website, theunschoolfiles.com. There you can get connected with community, get half-price zines for just $3, check out the Youth Partnership Directory, as well as connect with Rome Teen Travel. If you have the capacity to support my unpaid work, I would be so happy for you to partner with me over on patreon.com/theunschoolfiles. Until next time, stay kind to each other.